everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I had the very good fortune of having associates who work with me and bringing up ideas and things that we could pull out here. And we have in the studio today Dr. Sherry Siegel. Hi, Sherry. Welcome back.
Hi, Armand. Thanks for having me.
Good idea. Sherry said, you know, Armand, let's talk about three things. Let's talk about reality, delusions, and hallucinations. What a fascinating subject. Because you have to understand, we've done, I've been on air 20 years, and in that 20 years, I've been on an average of 2 times a week, and that's, it's an amazing number of shows that we've done, programs, and we've had to pull up a new subject for each one, but this becomes interesting, because reality, although I've questioned it before, is one of the very important questions. We used to live in a very small world. And the small world would consist of our neighborhood, our priest, our rabbi, the teachers, our parents. And they used to tell you what reality was. And they would say, this is reality. And you would say, okay. Until you grew up, and then they said, you have to go to church or you're going to get punished. And you said, but if I play basketball and say I went to church, I learned that reality is different than what I said. What you tell me. But slowly you would develop your own reality. That's the way it used to be. The other day we were interviewing some young people here, 17 years old, and they said, oh, no, I carry an iPod with me. I carry an iPhone. And whenever anybody mentions anything, I look it up on the internet and check what it's about. That's reality to me. So reality is what I see from information. So there it is, the information age. It's kind of come about because we used to think newspapers. If it was newspapers, it had to be the truth. But then we learned that newspapers are biased. We have most newspapers are owned by right-wing organizations in one form or another who tend to be right-wingish, you know, voting for the Republican people. And then we have the left-wing news. Like even WBAI, and we are fixed on the left wing, you know, and we're raising our fists and saying everything from our perspective. Is there a reality? What's real? What's not real? Great commercial many years ago. Do you remember the commercial with Is It Real or Is It Memorex?
I do.
Right? That was when they came out with audio tape for the first time, and you couldn't tell the difference between a taped voice and a singing voice, supposedly. Is it real or is it Memorex? How many things do we have to wonder about? Is it real? What about advertising? Advertising comes on to us from a world where we are being told over and over again, this is good for you, this pill is good for you, you have to take this thing, this will make you this will make you that. Tomorrow, Sherry and I will be doing a program we're going to be talking about migraine headaches and all of the claims that go around that as well. What is real? What is not? What's the truth? What is not? Is nutrition right? Is St. John's wort right? Is antidepressants right? Is there's no danger to this operation? Just go through it right? I was reading about people who had stomach bypass surgery, many of whom have turned into alcoholics. Do you know about that, Sherry?
I had not heard that.
Yeah, it's really terrific stuff. They did follow-up research, and the people who craved sugars found that they can no longer digest sugars, but they could digest alcohol. And the alcohol seemed to quell their sugar craving. Of course it would. So many people who had stomach bypass surgeries have become alcoholics. There's a question.
And there are a lot of crossed addictions, food and alcohol, different drugs and alcohol, very common.
So then you get the question is, there's another reality question, any addiction. Boy, that brings so much into question. And then we have love. Is love real? I love you. Feels so real when you say it. What's real? What's not? Is the other person's loving you true? Not true? Okay. This is all part of growing up. Part of why Sherry and I do what we do for a living, because we are considered adults who are fairly sensible, fairly well-balanced, and we have a good idea of how to guide you to what reality is for you. We are not definers of reality. You need the clergy for that. They tell you what's real. We don't tell you what's real. Was that a shot that I just delivered across the bow? You need religious people are always telling you what's real. They tell you about God and things like that. But we don't know. We don't know what's real for every person. Each person has their own reality. But sometimes we have to distinguish between what is fantasy and what is reality. So if a person says there's an elephant sitting in the room, your job as a professional is to say, well, I don't see this elephant, so could you tell me where the elephant is, and could we examine this elephant? And that becomes our job as reality testers and helping people find out where their reality comes from and where their delusion and possible hallucination comes from. That's our job. That's what we do. That's why we get hired. Because we are reality presenters. And not really the presenter of reality, but helping you find reality. That's our job. Therefore, we are very qualified to talk about Santa Claus. No, to talk about, hey, is Santa Claus real or not? No, you mean you gave me this whole thing to believe my entire life? And when there was noise on the roof, you told me those were the hooves of Santa Claus and it was really the mice, right? You're telling me that? All right. Man walked into my office one day, and his name was Edward, and he said to me, there are two men following me around. They're following me around all over the place. And I saw him, and he was clearly what we call in psychiatry a paranoid personality. Clearly he had delusions. Clearly he talked about some of the hallucinations he had. So when we got down to the two men following him around outside, I said to him, where are these men? He said, they're out by the elevator. I said, let's go out to the elevator. And I went out to the elevator, and there were two men standing out by the elevator. And I asked Edward to wait inside for me, which he did. And then I went over to the two men, and I said, what are you doing here? And they said, we're following Edward. And I said, well, why are you following Edward? And he said, because he sent a letter to the White House saying he was going to bomb the White House. And we were trying to figure out if he was a kook or if he was a real threat. So we follow him to see where he was going, Doc. And he said, now that we see him over here, we consider him. Do you consider, they asked me, do you consider him to be harmless? That was the real question. So there was a reality based on something that Edward did that looked like hallucination, but turned out to certainly confuse me. Another man walked in to see me. He was brought in by his family. He told me that he was Napoleon. He was in his mid-80s, but he was feeble. He was kind of really, you could see he was going downhill in his age, you know, and he wasn't going to be around for long. He said he was Napoleon and that he had a wife and he had a horse that downstairs waiting for him and a whole army that he had to attend to, and he had no idea why he was sitting in my office. His family brought him in, and I looked at him, and I thought to myself, okay, now here's this man whose entire life is built around this Napoleonic fantasy, hallucination. It wasn't just a complex. He had a real belief he was Napoleon. He really believed he was wearing the hat. He had a sword, the whole thing. His family came back to see me, and I said, here's our problem. This man doesn't have long to live. It's obvious by looking at him. We could uncover the delusion, we could take away this belief of his, and what will happen is he will have to face reality with none of the armor of believing that he is what he is, that he is Napoleon. I said, I don't know how he's going to go with that. He's going to sink into a fairly deep depression. So I asked his family, what would you rather do? Would you rather work at getting him to reality, in which case they would give him medication, and with the medication he would come down to reality and he would move into some kind of a senile depression? And or would you like to leave him the way he is and live with him the way he is and just tell your kids he's funny that way? He lived about 3 more years, but he did live as Napoleon. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So we're asking a question about delusion and hallucinations, and we want to present to you information for you so that you could test your own world of reality. Sherry, let's start off with an everyday description of, let's start with delusions, okay? So what would you say is an everyday description of a delusion?
An everyday description of delusion is a fixed belief that's false or fanciful or sometimes made up from deception.
Okay, let's go over that for a minute. It's a fixed belief. You need is something you absolutely believe. And you believe it because it's not true, and that makes it a delusion. Or it's fanciful. Now, I want to talk about fanciful delusions. I've seen a lot of people talk about, just roll them off their tongue. You know, like people will say, I've got bad karma. You know, that could be a fanciful delusion. You could believe that. I remember meeting a man who did very successful game shows. And he did these game shows that were all lucky, all that he always struck it rich. He made the most money with his game shows. And so I would say to him, so how come, even though you're so depressed and so useless, that you could keep creating these game shows? And he says, because they gave me love. They gave me luck instead of love. And he believed it. And he had luck working on his side instead of love. That's a fanciful kind of delusion. It fits where you are. You could always make it up.
And your example of the person who believed he was Napoleon, that was a fanciful delusion, but you couldn't convince him otherwise. He was clearly convinced that he was Napoleon.
And then there's the other one, which is derived from deception. And that means that you can make up a belief based on something that you were told that is not true, but you were told it was true so much that you began to repeat it and believe it yourself. So when it's based on deception, that's another thing, you know, another truth. So these are the garden variety, everyday language. Now let's talk about what it really is as it occurs in the context of neurological or mental illness, which is our field. Sherry is a neurologist, and she also deals in mental illness. She's a mind-brain specialist. Let's talk about some of these things that people go through. First of all, can we get a psychiatric definition? What would a psychiatric definition be? Meaning, like, you know, the professional definition of it be?
Well, there are 3 components to a psychiatric definition of delusion. And the first one is certainty. That means that the belief is held with an absolute conviction that it's true. The second one is incorrigibility. That means it's not changeable by any information that you can offer. You can't change somebody's mind. Incorrigible. And the third part is that there's an impossibility or falsity of content. So in other words, a pink elephant is sitting here in the room with us. It's an impossible thing to see or believe.
Well, a 20-foot pink elephant.
That's a good, yes.
Right,
is impossible. Seeing that this is a 9-foot studio.
Right. If you said it was a 1-inch studio elephant, I'd have to start looking.
You might believe it.
You know, incorrigible. That's great. You know, I've always been accused of being incorrigible. I never really thought about what it meant. I thought it meant stubborn, but it does mean stubborn in the sense that it's not changeable by compelling counter-argument or proof to the contrary. You can try to prove it to me. Reminds me of the 3 Christs of Ypsilanti. Have you read that book?
I have not.
Oh, I've got to give you this one, Sherry. This is one of the most beautiful books. Ypsilanti State Prison had a psychiatric division, and in the psychiatric division, there's a man who wrote a book about 3 people who thought they were Jesus Christ. And he took these 3 people, and he put them in a room where they had a group together. And they had to do discussions around the fact that each one of them believed that they were Jesus Christ. And the book is beautiful about how the mind works and the flexibility of the mind. You know, there's another thing, there's another delusion, that we're going to get to a lot of them. There's one that happens with people who travel to Israel. Do you know about that one?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
People who travel to the Holy Land, there's a number of people who get off the airplane and believe that they are the Mother of God, I believe it is. As soon as they get off the plane, they have this delusion, and they go out to the desert. I mean, it's like an automatic. It's funny. It's almost cultural, because as soon as they get off the plane, this thing happens to them, you know? And those are the kind of things. Now, of course, that brings us to what is real and what is not. Let's continue on with this definition and psychiatric definition. Are there types of delusions?
There are, and there are some that are probably very familiar to the audience. For example, some people may believe that their spouse is having an affair. The reality is the spouse is not having an affair, and no matter what the spouse can say, the person has a fixed belief that that spouse is having an affair.
What is that? So that's called delusional jealousy, I believe.
I think you're right.
And it's a person with this delusion believes that their spouse or lover is having this affair, like you said. And it stems from psychological jealousy, and the person or the gathers in evidence, confronts the spouse over and over again, and keeps doing it. Now, when we see delusional jealousy, you and I are not there to prove to the other person that it's not true. See, our job is to find out why this is manifesting and putting this wedge between them and their mate. There are men I know who are convinced that every time they turn around, their wives are cheating on them. So they watch them. So they follow them. So they have people follow them. So they come up with evidence about it. Another delusion, well, we'll talk about some of the other delusions.
Well, there are some that that people are heavy, for example. They believe they're fat. They may weigh 98 pounds, and they want to continue to lose weight because they believe that they are overweight.
What kind? What are those? Are those somatic delusions? But what are they? That's dysphoria, isn't it?
Well, there's something called the body dysmorphic syndrome.
Dysmorphic, yeah. But what about body dysmorphia? Is that a delusion? Is that based on delusion?
You know, I think it's probably not an easy definition to name, because for some people, what some people believe is overweight, others believe is normal. However, there are certainly some people who at 98 pounds or less, 88 pounds, believe that they're overweight.
They're fat. The word fat just is there all the time. Delusions of control. There's a false belief that another person, a group of people, external forces are controlling your thoughts, your feelings, your impulses, or your behaviors. Now, this is a common delusion. You know, they're out to get me. They're going to do it to me. They're doing it to me. A person may describe, for instance, the experience that aliens make him or her move in certain ways. And they broadcast that this, sometimes people really believe that they're being broadcasted through insertions in their teeth or something like that, you know? So this is a delusion of control, and it really is a delusion of being controlled. Now, that's a very interesting thing, because there's a whole range of delusions of control, which include the delusion of being controlled by your mate, which pops up many times in just a pure garden variety marriage conflict. You know, your mate is in control of you, yet you have all this freedom. So this belief that you could be controlled is one of the delusions that are very popular.
There are delusions of reference. When someone looks at a newspaper, a headline, or looks at a commercial on television and believes that the television is speaking to them, or the headline is written specifically for them.
You know, one of the signs of paranoia is that you have what they call ideas of reference. And what that means is, like, when you're checking with a person on their paranoia, you're saying to them, they are saying, my paranoia is validated over and over again by the sign there. You see the subway sign? It says, Uncle Sam wants you. You see? It's proving my uncle's name was Sam, and here he wants me, and there's the proof of it. There's another one called nihilistic delusion. You know, that's a delusion whose theme centers on the non-existence of yourself. Now, as you could hear, when you hear these delusions, some of them could be pretty severe in your thinking. Because remember the definition here. It can't be challenged. You believe it beyond all reality. So if you have somebody who has a delusion, you know, some people have a belief that the world is ending, for example. That's called a nihilistic delusion. And I knew someone the other day who had it picked to the very day. He said, you know, on this day, the reckoning is going to happen. Now, unfortunately, if you're a pro like we are, you know, we have these words in our mind, there's a nihilistic delusion. And that leads us to something that we know about a person. But the reality is not on that day, and this actually happened. Somebody said this is going to happen on February 3rd of this year. So on February 4th, I met with the man, and I said, what happened? He said, they postponed it. You know, it's postponed for now. The new date will be announced soon. So the mind moves around it, not reality changes it.
That's a great point.
Other delusions.
There's a delusion of guilt or sin. People believe that they have sinned and that their guilt is never ending, and that they're going to be persecuted, and they live in suffering and misery because they have the sense of being guilty.
You know, I've always had in my work, Sherry, whenever I find somebody who's got delusional guilt, I usually find that as a child, they experienced anger or rage towards one of their parents, but it was so unacceptable to them to experience this rage that they became guilty. They inguilted themselves. So they made themselves such horrible people. And unconsciously, behind all of this delusional guilt is this belief that they should not be angry at their parent. It's not allowed. When in therapy, the person was allowed to express or discover their own anger that they could have had as a child, this delusion goes away. Kind of a fascinating thing.
It's a spectrum. On one end, a mentor said to me that if you look at guilt as one end of a spectrum and anger at the source on the other end. Sometimes looking at both those together, you can balance out the sense of guilt. So guilt is a very painful and not a very helpful type of emotion.
Well, you know, it's not really an emotion. It's a thought. You know, we call it a feeling. How do you feel? I feel guilty. It's really, I think guilty. Mm. It's real all up in the brain.
That's a great point.
You know, so this is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel, and we're talking about reality versus delusions and hallucinations. We're going to get to it all today, my friends. We're talking about the different kinds of delusions that people go through, some of which are very serious, some of which are not. Erotomania. Now, I don't know how many of you have heard. What was the name of the very famous movie about erotomania? Erotomania is a delusion in which you believe that somebody is in love with you, and that you believe this, that the other person was the first to declare that they are sending you signals. You may believe, for example, that I, Armand DeMille, am in love with you, even though I have never met you. And you will believe that because during this show, I may have said the word something that sounds like your name. And so you will believe this about me. Now, erotomania is something that many people have about movie stars, about other people they work with. We had somebody who used to call in, who used to talk about this love affair she was having with this man, who she never spoke to him, but she felt that he really loved her. The danger of unattended erotomania, even though it sounds cute, is it is dangerous because there is another part of it which we practitioners are aware of, which is once a person has erotomania, an erotomanic attraction, they believe that the reason the person is not with them, they believe the cause of that is the mate of the other person, that some other woman is in the way. So if you're a woman with an erotomanic attraction to a man who's married, you believe the wife is in the way, and very often they will kill the wife. They will bring danger or accidents or approach the person. So it's really, when you see erotomania as a professional, you have to really keep your eyes open for possible danger to the mate of the erotomanic
person. Yeah, there were movies like with Fatal Attraction.
That's
was
Fatal
like
Attraction
that.
Was exactly that.
And there's a new movie, recent movie as well, where someone was threatening the wife of someone that she was in love with.
Yeah, and the idea is that she's believing that the other person is in love with her. So what do you say, friends? You say this is all crazy? We've got so much about this to talk to you about it. It's very touching to think that people can create with their mind things out of nothing. If we think about that, and we think about, Sherry has done some research on some of the masters who have played the greatest music, the greatest creators. Many of them were delusional. What did their delusional mind allow them to do? It also allowed them to create from nothing a whole new world, a whole new idea. You know, was Van Gogh delusional? It almost seems obvious he was. And yet, what did Van Gogh do? What was he allowed to do with that mind of his that stretched so far outside the box? And musicians as well. So part of what we're looking at is not how bad it is and how crazy it is, but how flexible the human mind is. And we're going to continue with this. We're going to also describe to you grandiose delusions, which is a delusion that a person believes that they are great. I mean, they have special powers, they have special talents. And you see this on all the American Idol shows. People who appear who seem they have no talent whatsoever, but they get up there and they believe, they are convinced that they do have it. And it's sad. So we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue following with delusions versus reality. And then from that, my friends, Dr. Sherry Siegel and I are going to move on to hallucinations, where we find more fascinating stuff. But in between, I'm going to play you something that's almost unrelated to it, but is cute and comes out of the past because it's a children's story by Shel Silverstein from a long time ago. I just found it, so I think I'll bring that to you as well. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, my friends, more stuff.
We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here. WBAI, New York.
Oh, I'm being eaten by a boa constrictor. A boa constrictor. A boa constrictor. I'm being eaten by a boa constrictor, and I don't like it one bit. Well, what do you know? It's nibbling my toe. Oh,
G. It's up to my knee. Oh my. It's up to my thigh. Oh fiddle. It's up to my middle. Oh heck. It's up to my neck. Oh dread. It's up to my...
Ah, the human mind. What a fascinating thing, and it's not as confusing as you think. Tune into The Positive Mind Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. and learn about why we do the things we do. This is Armand DeMille, The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. So that's Shel Silverstein, and it's so cute. But you like it, right, Sherry?
I do. I think he might. It's hard to know. Is he having a delusion that he was being eaten by a boa constrictor, or was it really happening?
You know, we talked about ideas of reference, and another thing came to my mind as we were talking about it, that once you have a delusion, you validate the delusion sometimes by going to people who tell you that what you believe is right. So, you know, now just think about this, and I'm thinking about, unfortunately, I think about Michael Jackson and how Michael Jackson went to physicians who told him that he was right when he needed propranolol to, what is this, what is the drug?
It was propofol, an anesthetic.
To go to sleep every night. He really needed it because he would only go to the people who would validate his perceptions. And so we very often will go to people who will validate our perceptions. So if you go to a therapist and the therapist says to you, hey, this is your imagination. Well, you don't want to see that therapist again, but you go to another one and he says to you, oh, what you're dealing with is very serious and it's real. That's the one that you want to go back to because you tend to want to go to the person who's going to validate your perceptions. Now, we've got to talk about persecutory delusions, okay? Would you do that, Cher?
Sure. It's one of the most common types of delusions, and it involves the sensation or the belief that you're being followed or you're being harassed or cheated, someone's poisoned you or drugged you, and that people are conspiring against you.
Wow. People with a set of persecutory delusions may believe that they're being followed by government organizations, like is the story I told you. And they just believe that somebody's out to get them. And this can fall into, we could then get this one, and someday we'll do another program on this. There are 5 and 6 different levels of paranoid belief systems that come out of persecutory delusions. Now, then there is the one we dare not talk about, which is religious delusions. You know, and a religious delusion is, here come the letters, any delusion with a religious or spiritual content, but it is a delusion. These may be combined with other delusions, such as grandiose delusions, the belief that you were chosen by God, for example, to be here on the planet, or that you're suffering because of some great religious guilt. Beliefs that would be considered normal for an individual's religion or cultural background are not necessarily delusions. Now, this brings us to that question about hallucinations and delusions. What was that comment that he made? You talked about the one about when it is in reality, when it appears in reality, there is no such thing as a hallucination.
Oh, there was a Jaspers, Dr. Jaspers, who said, and I have to find that reference.
Go ahead. I jumped you on that one. Well, you could just do it off the top of your head what he said.
Well, I mean, just to take these two groups, these really point out how difficult it is to show the line between what reality is and what's delusion. I mean, if some people clearly believed that JFK was killed by an organized group, are they deluded, or was it a reality? Again, religious beliefs. We're taught from an early age to believe certain things. And so what's the reality of whether we are chosen or not? Some people are told, some religions believe that they are the chosen people. So is that a reality or is it a delusion?
Well, where's the Jasper reference? Because I think this is very relative here. Jasper said, I mean, from what my understanding of what he said was, he said, if it appears in a culture as a regular belief, right, then of course, do you have it?
I have that Jasper's considered a subtle change in personality due to the illness. Nope, that's not it. Let me look around. Cultural factors have a decisive influence in shaping delusions. For example, delusions of guilt and punishment are frequent in Western or Christian country like Austria, but not in Pakistan, where it's more likely persecution. It says that cultural factors have a decisive influence on shaping delusions.
Yes, and one of the factors, like I remember, there's a I don't have the reference, but in the psychiatric dictionary, there are certain diseases that we would consider. Like there's one that comes from China, I know, which is your belief that your penis is shrinking. This is a syndrome that that appears so often in the culture and is related to the culture that it is no longer considered delusional, you know. And there are other things that people believe happen, and they happen only within the culture. They become part of folklore. You know, I believe that this person is doing this, or I believe my left hand is getting bigger all the time. And so once it becomes part of the cultural lore, then it can no longer be considered a delusion, even if it's not true. Now, here's where the problem is. So a person from Bango Bango comes here, and which is a little island off New Jersey, and they come to one of us doctors, and they say, you know, I think my pinky is growing. And we would say, you know, we would say to them, you know, well, it's not true. You're delusional. Let's find out what that's all about. Maybe there's a problem here. But if they come from a city of people with long pinkies, you know, this is a lousy metaphor. It's not working. Let me ask you something about delusions. Are there medical conditions that will lead people to be delusional? We're going to go to hallucinations in a minute, but what about delusions? Can we say medical conditions that would lead a person to delusional belief systems?
Well, there's some of the same medical conditions that can cause hallucinations, and those are dementias, some of the dementias, some of the drug-induced or alcohol-induced syndromes that people have, the delirium tremens, for example. People may have hallucinations, but they also may have delusions about and become paranoid that people are trying to hurt them, for example.
So the mind can get shaken by medical factors, all right? So we're going to go there now. We're not even going to get very specific, but both hallucinations and other things can be caused by some kind of pressure on the brain. Now, let's say tumors. Is there a common tumor that will yield a person's hallucinatory or delusional belief system?
It's not a specific disorder, but tumors in certain areas of the brain may cause certain types of hallucinations or delusions.
All right, so let's go to hallucinations for a minute. Let's talk about the different kinds of hallucinations. Difference between hallucinations and delusions. Could you tell me the difference?
Well,
a delusion is a belief.
Mm-hmm. And a hallucination is a perception in the absence of a stimulus. So it can happen in any of the senses, in your visual sense, your ability to hear, your ability to taste and smell, and the sense of touch. So you can have hallucinations in any of those senses.
Well, wait, let's just go with that even further. You can have visual, auditory, olfactory. Now, olfactory means everything smells like an old factory. No. I just always had a cute idea.
You're a punster.
There's olfactory, which is smell.
Exactly.
Gustatory.
And that's taste.
How could there be gustatory hallucinations? You believe you are tasting metal? You believe you're tasting something, and it's a hallucination?
Exactly.
And it has no physical base to it.
In temporal lobe seizures, people have gustatory hallucinations. They may taste, have an unpleasant taste, and they may smell burning rubber. Those are common for people with temporal lobe. It's an aura or a heralding of the seizure coming on.
Now, if you think you're smelling burning rubber, which is what they usually taught me was related to stroke, you know, if a person says something's burning, you know, you pick up your eyes and say, is this person in danger? You know, not because is something really burning, but this may be hallucinatory stuff. Is that hallucination, or is that a particular part of the body that yields something that is a little gas that smells like burning rubber? How does that, what really happens? You mean there's no smell like that? It's just imagined?
Well, since no one else around the person has that smell, then the person, himself or herself, is having the sensation without any outside stimulus. It actually comes from the brain giving the message.
I wonder if anybody's ever put their nose up to the nose of a person who's smelling it and seeing if it's inside, somewhere inside the brain, inside the nose. You know, that maybe there's something that happens. But yes, okay, so then there's also proprioceptive. What's a proprioceptive hallucination?
Well, your proprioception is your sense of yourself and your body parts in space. So sometimes people believe that they are closer to something or further away from something. What will happen is they'll reach for something and it won't be within their grasp if they believe it's close when it's really far.
Oh, I remember that from that one time somebody slipped me LSD. Right? A lot of these happen. Hallucinations happen with drugs.
Yes.
Now, and there are drugs that people take for the hallucinations because they love the colors and they love what they see and they love all of this, but they know that it's not real. What is nociceptic mean?
Nociceptive is the type of I can't say what kind of hallucination a nociceptive hallucination would be.
We're going to have to check that out. How about a thermoceptive? That's obvious.
That's a sense of temperature and a belief that a nociceptive, you know, my mind drew a blank for a moment, but nociceptive is pain. And so it has to do with a sense of pain.
Wow.
So the belief that something is hurting them when there's nothing actually stimulating their bodies. And a thermoceptive is of temperature.
Well, that's a weird one for you. Sherry, now look, somebody comes to you and they say, hey, I got a pain in my hip, right? And you do an examination, or I have a pain in my arm, and you do an examination, you say, I see no reason for this pain to be in your arm.
It's really a difficult problem because sometimes we as physicians cannot identify causes of people's pain. As our medical testing gets better, as we get more insightful and we learn more about the body, we understand more that there are things that are stimulating the body to feel pain. But then there are certain times when we've exhausted all the forms that we have, all the tests we have, and we can't find a cause of pain. Sometimes we say that pain may be coming from the brain.
And so you could actually have a tumor, a brain disorder, or a mental belief system, or something just weird thinking that results in pain.
That's correct.
Wow. What about formication?
Oh, that's a great and unusual syndrome. It's the sensation that bugs or ants are crawling on your skin or under your skin. Very uncomfortable. And sometimes that can happen from a disease of the skin, for example, or the nerves that affect the skin, like shingles.
I've seen people with shingles who would talk about the kind of creepy, crawly finger feeling under their skin.
Exactly.
Is that called formication?
It is.
Formication?
Right, with an M, mm-hmm. As in Mary.
And when a person has that, it's a sign that there's probably a neurological disorder?
Well, sometimes it can come from drugs as well. So people who take cocaine can have that sense of creepy crawlies, or people who are withdrawing from alcohol or drugs can also have that sensation of formication.
Hmm. So hallucination is thermoceptive. Now, here's my big question. A person goes through menopause. They say it's too hot in here, and they open the window, and they have these hot flashes. Is that thermoceptive, or is that hallucinatory? Is that illusory, or is that real?
Oh, well, they are feeling that feeling. And it's a great question.
But it's a great question because everybody who is hallucinating is feeling the feeling and thinking the thinking, too.
Sometimes we actually have physical evidence of people having a hot flash, and people will get flushed, for example. They'll sweat. And so that's some proof that someone is having a hot flash. But it is their reality that they feel warm. Sometimes it's not so obvious, and their feeling is that they're very warm or they're very cold.
Now, auditory hallucinations, also known as parakousia, I believe. Is that what it's called?
Exactly.
It could be talking voices. Now, is this the same as hearing yourself talk to yourself?
So hearing your own thoughts?
Yeah. In other words, if I'm saying to myself, everything is okay, don't believe anybody, is that a hallucination because I'm hearing myself say it to myself? Or am I really hearing myself saying to it, or am I thinking it?
If you believe someone other than yourself...
No, I'm saying it to me.
And if you believe that you're saying it to you, then it's not really a hallucination.
But if you hear it as a voice, even your own voice talking to you, it is a hallucination. You see? If you hear a voice that isn't there, that would qualify as a hallucination because the voice isn't there, nobody's talking, and yet I'm hearing a voice.
That's a great point. A lot of us have, in fact, I believe everyone has an inner conversation with themselves, and
right.
They may actually hear an inner voice, but they're aware that it's an inner voice, that it's something inside, that not somebody outside saying, Armand hurt this person or something.
Or even you saying to yourself, you hurt that person, but saying it in such a way that you hear yourself thinking. You hear yourself saying it. You actually listen to yourself. Your ears are involved, as opposed to your thinking is involved. That is when it becomes hallucinatory. See, that's when it goes off just being internal thinking to being hallucination. Yesterday, the two young people who were here describing some of the new technology, we're talking about text messaging, and he used the phrase silent conversations. He said, oh yes, text messaging is silent conversations with your friends. See, so I imagine now, if you imagine a text message coming in, is that hallucinating? That's getting too complicated. All right, now, so hearing voices is something, but now there is a group of people I know called the Hearing Voices Movement. It is an advocacy group for people who hallucinate voices. Just because we would use hallucination as one of the primary symptoms of schizophrenia. This is in my field. If a person hears voices or sees things that aren't there, we say that person is schizophrenic. That's been our tendency over the years. There's another group of people who say, oh no, I hear voices and I am not schizophrenic. And I've met some of those people. They hear voices that aren't there, but they are not schizophrenic.
It reminds me of a story that Oliver Sacks talks about, someone that he knew who heard music. And there are other neurologists who have had that same report from patients when there's no outside music, but they actually hear music going on in their minds.
So,
and these are, of course, sane people.
So the question becomes so many different things, and we're talking about some of the... Just let's quickly go over a couple of the things. Parkinson's disease, how does that relate to hallucinations?
Well, sometimes the patients who have Parkinson's are given medication that has dopamine, and they have an unusual type of hallucination. They call it Lilliputian, where they may see small people. They don't feel threatened by these people, but they see small people in their apartment. Sometimes they believe the small people move things around or take their dinner. And sometimes it's due to the medication, but sometimes the disease itself, especially when it's associated with Lewy body disease, which can look like Parkinsonism.
What is that called? Lewy body?
Lewy body, L-E-W-Y.
What is the difference between Lewy body disease and Parkinson's? Or is that too complicated?
It's a little complicated.
Okay, let's just get in our last few minutes. So a person could perceive Lilliputian people, little people.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another, no, that's not a hallucination, people who write really tiny. What do you call that?
of right, hypographia.
Hypographia.
Right, or micrographia is another word for
micrographia,
it.
Micrographia, I've had that where people come to me, or they'll send me a postcard, and there'll be a million words on it. You know
right.
what I mean? In fact, there's Dr. Brunner's soap. Have you ever seen Dr. Brunner's soap?
I have, peppermint.
Peppermint soap. Mm-hmm. Do you ever read a label?
It's just teeny.
Right? Teeny writing of a thousand things. He has a whole Bible on it, you know? Everything
yes.
written on it.
Well, people with Parkinson's can sometimes have micrographia. Sometimes people with depression, severe depression, can have micrographia too.
You see, Sherry, that's why you're good to have around. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Sherry Siegel. Reality. I don't know what reality is, but I do know this. I do know that if I could help you or Sherry could help you through this radio program, through WBAI, find out what may be real, may not be real, it'll lead to one thing. You'll feel safer inside yourself. Safer is such an important thing to walk around this world. If you walk around this world feeling in danger all the time, which is what partially what hallucinations do, and so do delusions. It kind of leads you to feeling unsafe and on edge. And that's a tough way to live. What we hope to provide you over the years through this radio program is enough understanding about yourself and about other people so that you don't feel so freaked out by this. And remember that we're all part of some huge, beautiful family. Before we go, I must ask you, Sherry, Charles Bonnet syndrome, what is it?
That's a syndrome when people are losing their vision. They may actually have visual hallucinations, and they're usually complex, which means that they're not simple hallucinations are those of just flashing lights or colors. Complex hallucinations are those that have form, people, things, buildings, cities. So people who are actually losing their vision can sometimes have these visual hallucinations.
I had a neighbor who had had dementia, and he was, or they thought it was Alzheimer's, and his thing was about shadows. He believed that he could only go out at night because there were no shadows, and he said it is in the shadows that he gets terrified. Have you heard of people terrified by shadows?
Yes, I have.
You know, it goes right back to Plato's caves. You know, it's like they're terrified of shadows itself, and the human mind is so spectacular in its variations. We thought we were going to present to you some of the beauties, which we'll have to do at another time, you know? Let's talk about some of the great people, the artists, maybe next week if you want.
Sure.
We could talk about the artists and the people who are great creators, who found themselves, you know, to be kind of caught in the trap of being either hallucinating and not being able to have people help and understand.
Mm-hmm. I did want to just add one thing,
sure.
that they've actually been doing neuroimaging or brain imaging studies.
Yes, what about it now?
And finding that there are places in the brain, in the temporal lobe, for example, and in other parts of the brain that are active on neuroimaging or change when there's when the brain is hallucinating. So there's a lot of very interesting research around hallucinations. And so it's clearly related to activity in the brain.
And so it's going to help us do what, Sherry?
It's going to help us understand people better and help people to not feel as if they're alone or in trouble and that there's hope.
Yeah. My co-host, Sherry Siegel. If you want to reach Sherry Siegel, you can always reach her through, you can call my office, right? Or you can send me an email and I'll forward it on to her. Sherry Siegel, and we will be back with you tomorrow to be going into detail about migraines, and it's fascinating stuff, my friend.
My favorite field.
Yeah. Be back with you tomorrow, then at thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org, either one's. Back with you tomorrow, my friends, at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille. Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you, Armand.